From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Last night's presidential debate came on the heels of Friday's bombshell video of Donald Trump talking obscenely of touching women without consent. Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump squared off in St. Louis, and it got ugly fast. First, Clinton.
He has said that the video doesn't represent who he is, but I think it's clear to anyone who heard it that it represents exactly who he is.
And Trump threatened Clinton. If he were in charge, he told her,
you'd be in jail.
You'd be in jail. Scandal, insults, and anger, uncharted political territory. This hour on Point, we are looking at the second presidential debate. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What do you make of the 2005 video of Donald Trump talking about women? What did you see here last night? Later in this hour, two of our top callers will join us to share their take on last night's town hall debate. But first, from St. Louis, where she covered last night's debate, is Molly Ball, politics writer for The Atlantic. Molly, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Great to be here.
And with us from Washington is Janet Hook, national political reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Janet, welcome back to you as well.
Hi, Tom. Good to be here.
Molly, it was unprecedented to my eye and ear last night. Can we tell yet how it landed on this campaign season, on the what must have been many millions of Americans who were watching?
I don't think we really can yet, but my sense of things is, you know, based on a couple of the instant polls that were done and some of the focus groups that were watching it, that to the extent that this debate had the ability to change anybody's mind, it mostly solidified where people already were. Most of the viewer reaction has been that while Trump may have exceeded expectations somewhat, didn't completely, you know, dissolve, that Hillary Clinton was seen as the better debater, was seen as winning the debate by some margin, and that to the extent that the narrative around Donald Trump was that his campaign was melting down and really doing badly, he may have sort of stabilize the situation a little bit, but probably not turn things around.
Janet Hook, you've just written about the Republican Party and what you called him facing a coast-to-coast rebellion and the party in turmoil. Does that remain the case as we speak?
Well, that really is the biggest question. I think Molly's exactly right that probably there aren't many voters whose position on the race will change as a result of this. A bigger question is how other Republican office holders who really have spent the weekend wringing their hands, stampeding, wondering what to do, whether they look at that performance and say, good enough for me to stick with him or head for the hills.
At this point, I'm reading here something like 160 of 330-plus Republican governors, senators, congressmembers have condemned those remarks. 30 have called for him to end his presidential bid. 8 have withdrawn their endorsements. Is that a wave that moves him, Molly, or not?
No, I think what Trump has signaled is that he's in this by himself, and he is willing to go to war with the Republican Party, with the establishment, with absolutely everybody. His campaign posted an ad last night that literally said, it's us against the world. And that's how Trump sort of sees this campaign at this stage, but also I think a bigger statement about his worldview and how he's always sort of seen himself as a sort of solitary man on a mission. And so he has confronted this situation with his party that Janet described as defiantly as possible. And so that's where we are. And to the extent that the trend line was pretty negative for Trump before this debate happened, I think those Republican office holders that Janet was talking about and that you listed are still in an impossible situation. They're stuck between a rock and a hard place. They see that this presidential campaign is in a very bad spot, but they're caught between their base, which is still very much supporting Trump, and the center of the electorate, the persuadable voters that are left, the swing voters, the independents, the moderates, particularly women voters, who have decided that this is a toxic candidacy and are repelled by it.
Janet, have you ever seen a backdrop like this to a presidential debate? Videotape, very, very explicit, of Donald Trump talking with Billy Bush, the Access Hollywood tape. That's come out where, you know, he's talking about, he says, when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything. You can grab them by, and he's talking very, very intimate terms for genitalia here. Has there ever been a backdrop like this to a presidential contest, to a meeting of major party candidates?
No, no, Tom, you can't see me right now, but I am shaking my head. I mean, this is just, this is completely without precedent. And it's sort of like every day of the campaign, every week and month of the campaign, we're hearing and seeing and writing about things that we've never seen before in a presidential campaign. You know, it just, even down to the words that we allowed to be printed in our newspaper, it's just, it's completely without precedent, which makes me draw another conclusion about what the impact of the video and the debate will be, which is kind of, who knows? You know, every prediction all along. It is at this point really hard to see how Trump could possibly recover. And so it may be that my who knows question is about, does he go down dramatically or less dramatically as a result of all of this? I mean, there's just this sense of volatility that you just don't know what's going to happen next.
So much of this language could not even be used on television, as the Anderson Cooper and Martha Raddatz questioned Trump and Clinton. But Cooper brought it up. He brought it up early. Here he was.
You called what you said locker room banter. You described kissing women without consent, grabbing their genitals. That is sexual assault. You bragged that you have sexually assaulted women. Do you understand that?
No, I didn't say that at all. I don't think you understood what was said. This was locker room talk. I'm not proud of it. I apologize to my family. I apologize to the American people. Certainly, I'm not proud of it. But this is locker room talk.
Locker room talk. And we saw the faces of Trump's wife, Melania, there in the hall, his daughter and family there, Clinton's as well. And of course, that became an issue as well. Molly Ball, what did you think of how Hillary Clinton went at Donald Trump on this issue? What was she, did she make the most, if that's the right phrase, of unbelievable material put on the table in these videos?
We heard a pretty strong message from Hillary Clinton making the case of why this is disturbing, but it honestly hardly needs to be said. And I think Trump's response to the question mattered more than Hillary Clinton's. His campaign, I talked to several of his surrogates and staff after the debate, and they feel that he put this issue away. They feel that by characterizing it as macho boasting that was in the past and didn't result in any actual actions, was just him talking in a way that was unacceptable and that he has apologized for. But if you listen to his apology, there was very little contrition. And Republicans who wanted him to really put this issue away felt that he didn't do that because he did leave so many lingering questions and because he didn't seem particularly remorseful. And so I think he is still very much – I think women who were troubled by the remarks on that tape didn't necessarily get the sense that he's a reformed man who would never do something like that today. And that's the case that Hillary Clinton wanted to make, is that what she was saying is, this is who he is. We can know his character by this moment in time. And I don't think he dispelled that notion.
I mean, he wasn't a frat boy at the time. In 2005, he was almost 60 years old. And then in another continent of entirely new kind of talk to me in a presidential debate, here was Donald Trump, after having talked about Hillary Clinton's emails and more, saying that if he were elected, he would appoint a special prosecutor to investigate her situation.
And I'll tell you what, I didn't think I'd say this, but I'm going to say it, and I hate to say it, but if I win, I am going to instruct my attorney general to get a special prosecutor to look into your situation, because there has never been so many lies, so much deception. There has never been anything like it. And we're going to have a special prosecutor.
And not just that. Where would she be? Listen to Clinton respond, and then Trump, jail.
It is, it's just awfully good that someone with the temperament of Donald Trump is not in charge of the law in our country.
Yeah. Because you'd be in jail.
Secretary Clinton.
Because you'd be in jail. Janet, this again just runs way behind anything I've ever heard in a presidential debate exchange. Way beyond.
Right. I mean, this is kind of what they do in other less democratic countries, jail the opposition. And maybe he was speaking hyperbolically, but it goes straight to the thing that you hear every time you go to a Trump rally, is that at some point, usually many times in the course of the rally, the crowd erupts into lock her up, lock her up. And I think that was kind of part of his whole strategy in the debate, I think, was to speak to his base, and nothing quite like that line to speak to their base.
Molly, does the base do what Donald Trump needs at this point in the campaign? And what about Hillary Clinton? What she needs from young voters and others after the WikiLeaks revelations of, you know, saying we've got to have a private policy and a public policy?
Well, to the first part of the question, that's exactly the right question, because the entire performance last night by Donald Trump was sort of red meat for the Breitbart crowd. And they love lines like that, as Janet said. But that does nothing for him with the middle of the electorate, with the voters that he makes nervous, the voters, you know, sort of educated voters in the suburbs and that kind of thing. You know, I don't think that Hillary Clinton handled those questions particularly deftly. And there are some quite damaging revelations in those WikiLeaks, the leaks of her paid speech transcripts, for example. And she didn't have good answers for some of those things. And I thought that Trump scored a pretty good line when he ridiculed her for citing Abraham Lincoln in response to that question about having different positions behind closed doors and in public. But, you know, it's not a question at this point in this campaign of what Hillary Clinton needs to do, because she's winning at this moment. And so all she needs to do is stay the course. And as long as Donald Trump doesn't manage to turn things around, she's sitting pretty.
They called it a town hall debate. There wasn't a lot of town hall in it, but we're going to try and open up that wing of the conversation as well. A couple of our very interesting frequent callers join us in a moment. Carl Hill and Don West, one who has supported Hillary Clinton, one who has supported Donald Trump. We'll see what they think of this. Molly Ball with The Atlantic, Janet Hook with The Wall Street Journal. Please stand by. Listeners, you can join us. What did you see on that stage last night? What did you make of the bombshell tapes revealed over the weekend of Trump talking about grabbing and groping women, their genitalia? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. And we are talking this hour about the town hall debate last night. Clinton, Trump, new scandal, bitter words, and what Americans think of what is going on here. You can join the conversation this hour. What did you make of the bombshell tapes out over the weekend? Were you satisfied with Donald Trump's line last night? He's embarrassed. It's locker room talk. Let's move on. Was Hillary Clinton effective in taking the high road last night? Did she let him off the hook? Did she have adequate answers for charges against her around private comments to Goldman Sachs, around emails and more? Janet Hook is with us, national political reporter at The Wall Street Journal. Molly Ball is with us, political writer for The Atlantic. Here was Anderson Cooper last night pressing Donald Trump on the big write-off he took and whether or not he has not paid federal income taxes.
Did you use that $916 million loss to avoid paying personal federal income taxes?
Of course I do. Of course I do. And so do all of her donors, or most of her donors. I know many of her donors. Her donors took massive tax write-offs.
Donald Trump on this, on Bill Clinton's sexual history and more, trying to turn it back on Hillary Clinton. And here's Hillary Clinton saying that the revelations over the weekend were more proof that Donald Trump, she said, is not fit to serve as president.
You know, with prior Republican nominees for president, I disagreed with them on politics, policies, principles, but I never questioned their fitness to serve. Donald Trump is different.
Let's take this to two of our listeners you may have heard on this air. They are callers whose voices stand out in the crowd. From Nashville, Tennessee, Carl Hill joins us, On Point listener there. Hillary Clinton supporter, 45 years old, owns a hauling company, metal recycling company, lives with his wife and five kids in Tennessee. Carl Hill, welcome. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
From Louisville, Kentucky, Don West is with us, On Point listener from Elizabethtown. Donald Trump supporter, or has been, 46 years old, served 25 years in the U.S. Army as a tank platoon sergeant, completed two tours in Iraq, two tours in Afghanistan, now lives in Elizabethtown with his wife, a couple of children, does charity work. Don West, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom.
Don, let me come first to you. What did you make of the tapes that came out over this weekend, and what did you make of how Donald Trump handled that revelation last night?
I think he could have possibly handled it a little bit better. I mean, banter, you know, talk about women like that is definitely not acceptable. But those tapes were, in my opinion, conveniently timed to be released. That's all we've been talking about over the weekend versus some of the things that were released by WikiLeaks that were actually, in my opinion, more damaging. But, you know, it was the news, and that's all anybody has ever talked about.
A lot of Republicans have moved away a significant number from Donald Trump over the weekend. How about yourself, Don? Did that, him talking about, you know, doing whatever he liked with women, coming on to a married woman, grabbing genitalia at will, did that shake your support of Donald Trump or not?
No, not at all. I mean, it did bother me that he did speak those words, but again, those were just words that he spoke. Whether they actually happened or didn't happen is a different matter altogether compared to actual deeds done. Those were just words.
Carl Hill, what did you make of the encounter last night in the context of what we've been hearing and learning over the last few days?
Well, first of all, thank you very much for inviting us. Don, thank you for your for the service to our country.
Thank you, sir.
As a grandson to a woman, as a son to a woman, as a father of three beautiful women, as a grandfather to a beautiful granddaughter, brother to several sisters, and Uncle Carl to a lot of nieces. I'm insulted. I'm insulted and embarrassed for our country that a man like Donald Trump will receive about 55 million votes. We are in no less than a constitutional crisis. This man should never, never be let anywhere near the White House. I agree with Hillary Clinton. I've always disagreed politically with the far right, but I've never, ever, in the 40 years of paying attention to politics, ever thought that a guy like John McCain or a guy like Mitt Romney or a man like Ronald Reagan wasn't prepared and qualified to be president of the United States. This is something totally different, Tom. We've never seen anything like this. I mean, to really stop and think about what we're talking about here. We're talking about a man, a 60-year-old man, talking about he was able to kiss women at will and grabbing women's genitals. This is called assault. In any normal world, this is assault. And it would be treated as a criminal offense. There's nowhere around it. And if any Republican think that they can run away from Donald Trump now, this is what pushed them over the edge. We shouldn't allow them to divorce themselves from Donald Trump. You don't get brownie points for divorcing yourself from a man when he finally says something as vulgar and vile as he said in that videotape.
If I may, Carl Hill, Don, Hillary Clinton spoke more or less in that vein last night at this point. She brought up a number of things that Donald Trump has said and that she feels he should have apologized for and has not. Let's listen.
He never apologized to the reporter that he mimicked and mocked on national television and our children were watching. And he never apologized for the racist lie that President Obama was not born in the United States of America. He owes the president an apology. He owes our country an apology. And he needs to take responsibility for his actions and his words.
Of course, that was a disabled reporter that Donald Trump mocked earlier on in the campaign. Donald Trump looked to turn it right around onto Bill Clinton and his sexual history. Here he was.
If you look at Bill Clinton, far worse, minor words, and his was action. His was what he's done to women. There's never been anybody in the history of politics in this nation that's been so abusive to women. So you can say any way you want to say it, but Bill Clinton was abusive to women. Hillary Clinton attacked those same women and attack them viciously. Four of them here tonight.
Four of them, yes, in the front row last night. Carl, you're a Clinton supporter. What about Donald Trump bringing up Bill Clinton's sexual history in the context of these new revelations on his own comments?
Remind me once again, who's running for president? Is William Jefferson Clinton on the ballot this year? No. Should he be shaming his wife to stand in her marriage for the sake of her child? This is his defense for being a despicable human being? This is his defense. Bill Clinton did it. I have 5 children, Tom. Me and my wife would not accept any of these excuses from my children, let alone from a candidate for president of the United States of America. Unacceptable.
Molly Ball and Janet Hook are listening. Carl Hill and Don West are with us. They were listening last night. On Point listeners, regular callers here, and lots of callers for the two of you, the four of you. Steve in Detroit, Michigan. Steve, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. As disturbing as it is that the Republican candidate is an admitted sexual predator and proudly brags about it, I was nonplussed last night when he said he would have Hillary Clinton investigated and jailed. This is the United States of America. We don't jail our political opponents. We don't operate gulags. This is not Cold War era Soviet Union. That is absolutely chilling to me. And I would have thought the lead article online in the New York Times and the Washington Post would have been Trump is going to jail Hillary Clinton if elected. I think it's just appalling. I've never heard anything like that in my life. I'm 60 years old, 12-year Navy veteran, and that worries me because I think he'd do it. He'd be more suitable as president of the Philippines than the United States.
Steve, I appreciate your call. It was a jaw-dropping moment, but as Janet and Molly point out, at Trump rallies, lock her up is the chant. I mean, we heard that at the Republican National Convention. Hillary Clinton's emails came up last night. Here's one exchange there.
Oh, you didn't delete them?
Allow her to respond, please.
Personal emails, not official.
33,000?
Yeah, not, right. Well, we turned over 35,000, so
oh, yeah.
It was.
What about the other 15,000?
Please allow her to respond. She didn't talk while you talked.
Yes, that's true. I didn't.
Because you have
I didn't
nothing
in
to
the
say.
First debate.
Don West, it was a pretty remarkable moment. Donald Trump threatening a special prosecutor and going on to say that he would see her in jail. A prosecutor to look into her situation, which is a pretty broad word. It seems like it could mean almost anything. Are you comfortable with that, Danielle? Are you, Don, are you in the lock her up crowd, or was that a bridge too far for you?
Well, Tom, my thing is that there are a lot of things that Hillary Clinton has done, especially with the emails. I mean, when you've got a special investigator who can't tell a congressional hearing exactly what he can divulge to them because of what her emails contained, that should tell you a lot right there. And for her to say that all 33,000 or majority of the 33,000 of those emails were just personal, I mean, she's only just reinforcing her base and not really telling me anything new.
But is it right for a candidate to threaten his opponent right there on the stage with jail? Say she'd be in jail if he were in charge.
Well, yes. I think that was a pretty good call on his part. I mean, nobody else is saying it, and everybody else should be saying it for the things that she's done. For him to come out
on stage. FBI looked into it and didn't even raise charges against her. So does he know better than they?
Well, exactly. They didn't raise charges on her, but they did say she did do those things. And she did have those emails.
They said there wasn't evidence to pursue charges. I mean, there's a difference. You may disagree with them in not bringing charges, but wow. Donna in Mooresboro, North Carolina. Donna, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My statement is I'm really, you know, hearing on the radio about the controversy with Donald Trump and the women that he was alleging with. I really don't think that, you know, this defines his ability to run the country. I mean, if we're going to look at things like this, I mean, let's look at Bill Clinton had women at the White House. You know, in my opinion, if we're going to have this as a personality contest, I'm more concerned about who Hillary would bring to the White House just to get back at Bill. But I really think that Donald Trump is, you know, I think he's legit. And I think that, you know, if we're going to need anything in this country, it's change. And I don't think that Hillary can bring that. And Hillary Clinton has already leaked some vital information that could have gotten out over to our opponents overseas. So, you know, with that alone, I mean, why is this country even worried about what Donald Trump is doing with other women? Who could care less? It doesn't divide his ability to run this country.
I mean, Donna, some might say half the country are women, and they might be unsettled at the very least with him talking about grabbing women's genitals at will. You can do anything. you know, moving on a married woman, you know.
I can understand that. And I am a woman of 28 years old, and I can tell you most likely those women, if he did grab at them, provoked him, or made him think that it was okay. But like I said, 10 years ago.
But that's not what he said. Just for the record, he said, I'm automatically attracted to beautiful women. I just start kissing them. It's like a magnet. Just kiss. I don't even wait. That's what he said.
Okay, and... Okay, well, if that's the case, then you're telling me just because I say that I'm automatically attracted to men, at least he's not saying he's attracted to men. But if I said I'm attracted to men and I want to kiss everyone I see, that doesn't make my ability to do my job correctly. I mean, I can do my job and be attracted to other women. I mean, he's a man.
Just dive in and start kissing them, whether they want it or not. Grab them by the genitals. You can do anything, he said. Is that all right in the Oval Office?
I'm sure that they provoked him.
Donna, we've got it. I appreciate your call. Carl Hill, there is a readiness we're hearing here to overlook, and people saying he'll bring change, and that's what Donna's looking for.
Wow. Basically, she just said, wow. How do you answer something like that, Tom? How do you answer a person who basically said that the woman deserved it? That's, if you unpackage her call, the woman deserved it. And furthermore, that's just one of the thousands of things that disqualified Donald Trump to be president of the United States of America. His policies are non-existent at worst and incoherent at best. And I would like to address something that Don said about arresting Hillary Clinton if he so become president. Don, you defended this country, and I respect that. My father, my grandfather, both of my grandfathers defended this country in multiple wars, unfortunately. But we're not a banana republic. We don't lock up our vanquished opponents in the political arena. This is something that we don't do. That is inherently un-American. And the fact that Donald Trump supporters are okay with this and they're fine with this. This reiterate what I said earlier, that this is a constitutional crisis and people must look at themselves in the mirror and say, am I willing to turn over the reins of power to Donald J. Trump, a guy that's unfit, unwilling to even learn? He is not presidential in any type of way other than he's old enough to be president and he's an American citizen. This man is not willing to learn policy. He's not willing to learn domestic policy. He travel in conspiracy and talking points. You can't do that if you want to run a country of 300 million plus people. You can't govern that way. He doesn't even understand basic civics in the way our country is governed.
Let me put it to Don, if I may, Carl. We just got a minute before the break. Don, you served, you fought Iraq and Afghanistan to defend the Constitution, the country. Are you worried that Donald Trump might step past the Constitution, blithe talk about jailing and so on?
No, not at all. In fact, just like Carl was saying, what Donald wants to do is actually, you know, like just get a special prosecutor to go down and relook at everything that she's already done. Because right now, just like the FBI said, she did these things, but we're not going to prosecute. You know, we're not going to try her for them. And I think that's wrong. I think there's a problem with our system right now where a politician is allowed, that we're allowing the politicians to do these things and literally get away with it. And Mr. Trump is saying that once he's reelected president, that he's going to go ahead and get that prosecutor and investigate.
There,
I think that's a good answer.
There's the canyon right there. Don West, Donald Trump supporter from Kentucky. Carl Hill, Hillary Clinton supporter from Tennessee. Please stand by. Janet Hook with The Wall Street Journal and Molly Ball with The Atlantic are listening on. We'll turn to them in just a moment. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Thank you. Support for On Point and the following message come from Goldman Sachs. Get insights from some of the world's leading thinkers on markets, industries, and the global economy in the firm's podcast, Exchanges at Goldman Sachs. You'll hear discussions on topics with far-reaching implications like climate change, autonomous driving, the future of China's economic growth, plus much more. That's Exchanges at Goldman Sachs, available on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play, and at gs.com/podcast.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the town hall debate last night in St. Louis, Missouri. Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, bombshell videotapes of Trump coming out just in the days before that meeting with very explicit and aggressive language toward women, sexually aggressive. WikiLeaks as well, talking about Hillary Clinton's putting out in public Hillary Clinton, some of her comments to Goldman Sachs and other private audiences. What is happening to political discourse in this country? Janet Hook is with us from the Wall Street Journal, Molly Ball from the Atlantic, and On Point listeners, Carl Hill of Nashville and Don West of Kentucky with us. One a Clinton supporter, one a Trump supporter. Here was Donald Trump last night saying Hillary Clinton has hate in her heart.
We have a divided nation because people like her, and believe me, she has tremendous hate in her heart. And when she said deplorables, she meant it. And when she said irredeemable, they're irredeemable. You didn't mention that. But when she said they're irredeemable, to me, that might have been even worse.
And Hillary Clinton?
Okay, Donald, I know you're into big diversion tonight, anything to avoid talking about your campaign and the way it's exploding and the way Republicans are leaving you.
And on it went. Amy in Springfield, Massachusetts. Thank you for calling, Amy. You're on the air.
Thank you, Tom. Good.
Hi.
So one thing. Hi, Tom. One of the big concerns that I had was watching Mr. Trump's body language. If we look at the work of Gavin DeBecker, who was the go-to stalking guy under President Bill Clinton, and if we look at the work of Paul Ekman, who many people look at body language, his body language was threatening throughout much of the debate. He was pacing around her. He was walking in circles. He was staring her down. And he also, he was pushing forward onto his chair and looking in a different direction. It was not body language of someone who was in a respectful debate. And that was very concerning, as well as there are women, nobody has spoken about the women who've come forward to say he did pop a Tic Tac in his mouth and he did put his tongue in my mouth. And so why haven't we heard from what those women have said that their experience in their body was?
Yeah.
There's a Twitter feed where someone called out, not can you tell me if you were personally assaulted by a man, but when was your first inappropriate sexual contact by a man? It's very common, and we cannot condone this.
Amy, we've got it. Molly and Jen, let me come to you with the body language. Here, too, we were on new territory to my eye last night. Of course, in the town hall setting, Molly, it has become normal for candidates to move away from their little table and chair. Bill Clinton went out, you know, right up to the audience, almost on his knees, as people say, to respond to some of the comments. But Donald Trump's kind of circling pacing that Amy's describing last night, I saw it. I guess we all saw it. That did look different. Is that just the way things work now? I don't know what to describe that sort of gladiatorial circling.
Yeah, I think it's always possible to make too much of things like mm-hmm. body language and read too much into them and focus on the sort of theater of the debate rather than the words and the substance. At the same time, I thought it was really interesting and revealing when one of Trump's supporters, the UK politician Nigel Farage, said after the debate that Trump was like a silverback gorilla, that he was the alpha male on the stage. And I think so much of this for Trump is about a sort of theatrical dominance. And part of the reason that his supporters felt that he won the debate was they felt that he didn't lose his cool the way he did in the first debate. And he did he sort of physically, as well as rhetorically, in their view, dominated Hillary Clinton. I mean, it's so much of the this campaign has been about, sort of gender dynamics and people's views of masculinity and femininity. And to the extent that Donald Trump, in his statements, in his positions, and in the way he conducts himself, sort of epitomizes that sort of hyper-aggressive, hyper-masculine, hyper-macho image, I think that's part of what some women may have taken away from the debate last night.
Janet, there's machismo there, no doubt, but what about the coarsening of political discourse, body language or straight-up language? We are seeing and hearing things that we have never seen before.
Yeah, and, you know, if I could just go back to the line that you mentioned before about him saying to Hillary Clinton that she has hate in her heart, that's not the coarsest thing that was said, but it was, in a way, one of the more shocking or telling things about how political debate has changed. Because it is true that right now, Republicans and Democrats don't just disagree. They impute motives. They see each other as evil. And I think Trump did call her the devil. And, I mean, there's just this sense of that there's no more honest disagreement about the direction of the country. It's like you speak to people, your opponent's deep moral character. And I don't know. I mean, that's not entirely new with Trump, but it really has kind of, he took it to a new level last night.
Don West, hate in her heart, she's the devil. How did you hear that? And where is our political discourse in this country headed, Don, with that kind of characterization on a presidential debate stage?
I think it all started right about when he made his first speech over a year ago, when he was talking about what he wanted to do with the country, whether border security, illegal immigrants, refugees. The Democratic Party took all of those words from him and turned it into racist. That now, even yesterday when Hillary was on stage, instead of using the word illegal immigrant, at which Mr. Trump has been saying, she's been using the words immigrant a lot. It's trying to bunch everybody together in that same group when it's not true. So with Mr. Trump actually saying those things about her, I mean, this all started back then. You know, he was trying to talk about what his policies were, and she went right on the race hate train and just took off from there.
But are you worried that we find ourselves in such a swamp of vulgarity that we can't get back to a kind of decent interaction, Don?
I'm hoping we can. I really do. But it started off the weekend with that crazy tape that was just so conveniently released.
Donald Trump's tape,
NBC.
Yes,
sir. And so I'm actually glad that the debate didn't really focus too much on that, and they tried to go elsewhere. Both candidates were really off topic on most of their issues that they wanted to go into, but that was kind of disturbing for me also.
Carl Hill, I
think that's how it's going.
Carl is concerned that he'll walk away from the Constitution, that he'll take us into realms of, yes, racism and more that would be really unacceptable for this country. You say you're looking for change. What's the change you're looking for, Don?
Racism is definitely a hot topic, and it has been more divisive now than it has been in a long time. If we had a white president in the Oval Office, would we be blaming him for the racism going on now? It is at an all-time high, but we're not going that high up in the food chain. We're just blaming law enforcement and just blaming
You're saying it's Barack Obama's fault that there's racism in this country? Is that what you're suggesting?
Well, I'm not suggesting that at all. I'm just saying that if it was a white president in the Oval Office, maybe he'd be blamed for all the racism going on now, but it's not happening. What is happening is that the Democratic Party has taken it upon themselves to use that as their only agenda going forward tool. And it's split our country in half. You've got Donald Trump supporters of every ethnic background, every race that want to support him and are being called out because they aren't, you know, because of their skin color or their ethnic backgrounds. And that's wrong. It's like if you want to support Donald Trump for who he is or what he stands for, it doesn't matter what race you are.
What does he stand for to you, Don?
To me, he stands for where this country needs to go. We've lost our backbone to the world. We are the laughingstock of all of our enemies. We need definitely tighter border security, which is what he's been saying, but most importantly, we need to definitely stop this divisive nature that the Democratic Party feeds all their all the constituents on.
You put that at the doorstep of the Democrats. Carl Hill,
yes, sir.
You hear there, Don wants backbone, and he sees Trump representing it, and he sees the divisiveness originating in the Democratic Party. What do you say, Carl?
Well, let's not kid ourselves, and let's dig deep into the political of this. The Republican Party has walked around in a racial minefield for the past 50 years, ever since the passing of the Voting Act and the Civil Rights Act. They employed the Southern strategy, which was employed by Richard Nixon and Pat Buchanan. And those guys at that time said, you know what we can do? We can get all the white people to vote for us. We can use racial issues. We can use coded language such as young bucks. We can use welfare queen. We can use these things as a whipping stick. And they finally stepped on one of those landmines in the form of Donald J. Trump. Now, what I've been hearing my whole life, whenever Republicans lose, they say, well, we lost because our candidate wasn't conservative enough. Well, who's more conservative than Ted Cruz? I would invite any of our guests or any of our callers to say who is more conservative than Ted Cruz. You didn't choose the conservative. You chose the racist. This is what he is. This is what this party is. This is what this party has always been about. It is not so much that they're mad at Donald Trump for saying these things. They're mad at Donald Trump in the way he say these things, in the most vulgar and low base way.
Don says the country's become a laughingstock globally and we need more backbone, and he sees it in Donald Trump. What do you say to that?
I say that's nonsense. Absolute nonsense. Our country, our military is strong as any military on the face of this earth. We have enough nuclear weapons to destroy our planet 1,000 times over. Our economy has gained jobs, millions of jobs over the past 8 years. Remember where we were. We were bleeding 750,000 jobs per month at the end of the last Republican administration. His name was George W. Bush. Conveniently, Republicans tend to forget about him. Our stock market had dipped below 7,000. Now it's at record numbers, 18,000. Commerce is going on in our country unbelievably. I go out and I see people spending money. I remember, Tom, in November of 2008, I had one job. One job.
Your
December
hauling company.
Of 2008,
yep.
Exactly. I had two jobs. In January, I had four jobs. We were cratering. And President Obama and the Democratic Party helped turn this ship around. But just like the Republicans are and how they've always been, we can't let them off the hook. January 20th, House of Representatives members had a meeting where they said that they were going to do everything to stand in front of President Obama. They were not going to let him have a win. And that weakened our country. And on top of that, Senate Republicans did the same thing. These things would have been called treason in years past. And then you have a guy like Don and other Republicans who want to complain about our country not being great. I beg your pardon, sir. I really love your service to our country, but our country is great right now. There's nothing wrong with America that can't be fixed by America.
Don, Carl, stand by. Elaine in Burlington, Vermont, you're on.
Hello. I find it fascinating that so many of Trump supporters are so willing to accept that everything he says is absolutely the truth, and we really like him because he says it how it is, and he says what he means, and he gets it out there, excepting for when he's not really saying what he means, and he doesn't really mean what he just said, and all of his apologists walk it all back for him. And it just fascinates me that it's taking until now for people to start pulling back from him, those with any kind of power to do anything. But that he just keeps saying what he says. And the very kindest thing I think we could say about him is that he behaves in his bullying and his petulance and and his discussions about women and how he may or may not actually behave with them, but certainly how he feels about them, is he behaves like a prepubescent boy who's just got his hands on his older brother's girly magazine.
Elaine, we've got it. Let me get one more call here, if I may. Kevin in Rhinelander, Wisconsin. Kevin, you're on.
Hi, Tom. I don't think that Trump is off the hook with his comments on sexual assault, because it's not just words. Words absolutely do matter. Rape culture is so many things, and it starts with words. And
rape culture, you're saying. Yeah. Sorry, just only, you said rape culture.
Yeah, rape culture. By saying it's just words and how he wants to grab women by the genitals, like, that's absolutely rape culture.
And you think it starts with the language?
I think it starts absolutely.
Who are you voting for, Kevin?
I was undecided until last night, and now I believe it's going to be Clinton because of those comments.
I appreciate your call. Don, last thought. You've been a caller. You've been a caller that we've noted for your thoughtful support of Donald Trump. You hear Carl worried about the future from a different direction, saying, come on. Anything here that's shaken your view in what you've heard, Don? Are you firm with Trump?
Yes, sir. Definitely firm with Trump. Last week when I was asked why I support Donald Trump, I looked towards family. And it's ironic that Ms. Clinton actually said that about him last night. I think she might have heard me. But, you know, my wife and I both raised two special needs children, 6 and 8. And I judge people basically off how they raise their kids. You know, Donald Trump to me is a good character, has good character in that aspect. So that was my initial reason why I went with
look to
him,
the children, the same place that Hillary Clinton went. Our time is short, but Carl, last word to you on this race, where it stands, where it's headed.
Well, I think it's headed for a defeat for Donald Trump, which would be a win for our country. And I think the fever is finally going to break. You know, there's a lot of doom and gloom about our country, and I can't really grasp my head around that. And I think that the fever of the old Confederacy is finally breaking, and our country can move forward.
Well, it is certainly a kind of spectacular exchanges we've seen. If that's the breaking of a fever, we'll see. I appreciate the two of you being with us today. On Point listeners, Carl Hill of Nashville. Thank you very much, Mr. Hill, for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
And Don West out of Louisville, Kentucky today. Don, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
Molly Ball and Janet Hook, you're good sports to come on to raise the curtain on what we saw last night and to listen with us to these two voters thinking about their path forward. Janet Hook at the Wall Street Journal, thank you very much for being here today.
My pleasure. Thank you, Tom.
And Molly Ball at the Atlantic. Thank you so much, Molly.
Great discussion. Thank you.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. This is On Point.